Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm excited about Joan Pride being back on the show. She only does this once a week, and it's so much fun to have her on the show. Joan, hi.
Hi, Jim.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
It's good to have you back. You know how excited it is for me when you join us.
That's why I do this show.
It's like a dream come true for both
right.
of us, isn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe.
Like Christmas on every day, right?
In March, yeah.
That's right. Joan, I want to go off the letter for just a minute and talk a little bit about something that happened last week.
Well, I hope I know about this.
I think you do. Just for a minute. We'll talk off the letter just for a second. And that was me being in the presence of Hillary Clinton's speech.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
When I was in Florida, when I was at the fourth annual Office Depot Women's Success Strategies for Women's Business Women. Conference. There were 1,050 women and me, and I legitimized that whole thing because I made it politically correct.
Yeah.
But anyway, I heard her speak on Sunday night, and she really impressed me. I mean, we've always known she was highly intelligent.
But aren't you kind of biased because you're a Hillary Clinton supporter to begin with?
Well, no, that's not exactly true. But the thing is that what I was impressed with was how she came across to the audience, how she seduced the audience with her delivery, the way she spoke. She walked away from the podium and spoke for 30 minutes, probably 20, 30 minutes without a note, very, very coherently, very much, very excellent message. She took questions from the audience left and right and took all the best
shots. She signed her book?
She said, I will stay as long as you are here with books. I will stay here and sign those books. I'm telling you, she loved up that audience and seduced them, and me too. I mean, I was impressed. I was so impressed with how
now,
she
seduced has a pejorative connotation. That's
no,
an interesting
no, no, no,
word.
No, not in the way when I say seduce an audience. That's not. It's different. And so,
okay.
Anyway, I'm just saying that she really impressed the audience and me too. And so here's my prediction that I haven't heard anybody else say.
Mm-hmm.
She's working really hard to get women registered to vote, because she said in that meeting, in that speech, that 50 million voting age women did not vote in 2000. 50 million.
Wow.
So, but also, I think there were 50 million men who didn't vote.
Probably
as well.
Not. Yeah, I mean,
but the
voter,
thing is, but
turnout is usually not high.
That's right. But her message is to women that day, and so I know she's trying to get women registered to vote and encourage them to vote. And so what I believe is, when she runs in 2008, which I think she will, I think she'll probably be the Democrat nominee, and she will be a formidable challenger to whoever's on the Republican ticket. Now, that's not my prediction, though.
My prediction is
that she will be so formidable as the top person on the ticket for the Democrats in 2008 that the Republicans will have a woman on their ticket in 2008. That's my prediction.
Well, that makes sense. Now, so you're predicting she will be the presidential nominee in 2008 regardless of what happens this year?
I guess you could almost say by default I'm making the prediction that Kerry won't win.
Okay.
But that, you're right. I mean, I leaped over that one. But the thing is, let me put it this way. If that's the way the stars align and she is the nominee, maybe that's the more thoughtful way I should have said it. If she is the nominee in 2008, which I know she wants to be, I believe that very much. I don't think anybody doesn't believe that. The Republicans, she will be so formidable as a compelling candidate to people in the middle, even, that the Republicans will have to put a woman on the ticket. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not making a moral judgment one way or the other. I'm just making that observation. What do you think?
I'm actually thinking ahead to try to figure out who it might be, like maybe Elizabeth Dole or somebody like that.
No, Elizabeth Dole will be, I've met her and she's a great lady, but she'll be already out of her, it'll be too late for that, for her. It'll have to be someone else. It'll have to be somebody younger.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I don't have any idea who it'll be, and I don't have any idea.
Well, I'm writing all this down so that, you know, I can, 2008, I'll be checking this out.
Think about this. Think about this. If there are 50 million voting age women who aren't voting, what would bring those 50 million women to the polls? Something that would have to happen for, you know, something very unusual, very unique would have to happen, unprecedented.
Right.
Now, it's not unprecedented that a woman would be on the ticket, but it'd be unprecedented that a woman would be on the top of the ticket.
Yeah. Well, again, all this presumes that Mr. Bush wins this year,
right.
And I don't think
that's
we're
right.
There yet.
Well, you know, I will say this, that people on both sides of the aisle know that Mr. Kerry has a pretty uphill battle, if for no other reason than that Mr. Bush has a lot of money in his war chest.
He does. He has a lot of money. That's
true. A lot more than Mr. Kerry. So that the odds are, let me put it this way, clearly Kerry's the challenger. He's the long shot in some ways. But you're right. And of course, Kerry's success is not good for Ms. Clinton either, is it?
Correct.
Because she doesn't want to wait to 2012.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, I just thought that I would add that little bit of observation, having heard her speak. I mean, a lot of people haven't heard her speak, at least not recently. And
right.
And being able to be in the audience when she spoke, this ought to be a heads up.
She's been to charm school.
I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think there's any question about that because she was. She was smooth. She was warm. She was huggable. You know, all those things that an audience wants in a speaker: entertaining, self-deprecating, funny. I mean, all those things. She's only going to get better at that.
I would think so. Yeah. Well, she's being taught by the master. You know.
Well, of course. But now, and folks, I'm not making. You know, nothing that I'm saying has a political angle here. One way or the other, I'm just looking out into the future, and you know, there are people who are listening to this, Joan, who are saying, "Wow, yeah, go girl," and then there are people who are, you know, breaking out in a cold sweat about it.
Right.
But anyway, I just thought that would be that was an interesting thing that happened last week that I haven't had a chance to talk about, and I thought you'd like to hear about that. I knew that.
Thank you.
You love hearing anything I have to say, right, Joan?
That's right.
It's one of those dream come trues again, isn't it?
There you go.
Come back. We're going to talk about what steel is doing to the economy. It's kind of hurting it. We're going to get Joan to tell us about that. She's the expert on this. 20 after. Stay with us. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes every week by email. It's free. And also all the other things. We got a lot more new things, by the way. Check out the resources, the books and resources section of our site. That's brand new stuff there that I think you'll enjoy and appreciate. We've worked really hard to make those resources available to you and to help you make some decisions on some of the things that you want to have in your possession to learn more about running your small business. So check that out when you get a chance. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, this week, Kiplinger says the steel crisis is actually going to slow the economy. Now, all around the world, people are saying, steel crisis? What steel crisis?
Well, we are saying that there's a steel crisis. We're saying soaring prices and supply bottlenecks. And when you look at that situation, it reverberates into a lot of other industries.
Yeah, it really does. The automobile industry, construction.
Exactly.
And, didn't we have a period not too long ago, maybe the last year or so, where we were worried about the falling prices of steel? It was like a glut of steel because of some dumping by other countries. Wasn't that only not much more than a year or so ago?
Well, there was dumping, but then didn't we apply tariffs?
Well, that was a while back. So you think, so maybe the tariffs have created some of this, huh?
I think maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Of course, as you know, that was one of the things that I took Mr. Bush to task for was the steel tariffs. But you guys actually say that it's going to hurt the gross domestic product this year, even though it's still going to be, according to you, according to Kiplinger, 4.2%.
Right. And what we're saying is, and I'm sure your listeners are saying, well, how can that be? Well, what we're saying is the growth, even though we'll end up at 4.2%, more of that growth will come toward the end of the year rather than early in the year, which would have been nice to have it sooner. But we're saying it'll be delayed.
Well, you know, when I made my prediction that the economy would grow at 5% for the year, I wish I'd put a little footnote that said, unless steel prices go up. I didn't think about that, John.
It's a little late now to amend that.
But you guys say that the prices are actually going to go higher before they fall.
Yeah, we're saying hot rolled steel up to $450 a ton, up from $380 right now.
Well, and you know, Joan, a lot of people are saying, like me, what's this have to do with me? What's this have to do with my life? Well, as you said earlier, and as we were talking about a second ago, it really filters into our economy, into all the things that we buy. You know, the shirts that we make are made on equipment made of steel. And the shirts that we buy, the clothes we buy, and so it gets into all of our, it's a lot like the fuel situation that we got right now. I'm paying record prices for gasoline right now.
That's
are you?
Right. That's, oh, no question about it. We are. And when we list, you know, a bunch of different various types of industries, plumbing suppliers, office furniture firms, oil equipment makers.
Yep.
I mean, you think about how many different types of firms would be affected. And we're also saying, we're not just talking about big companies. We're saying small and mid-sized
right.
manufacturers as well.
There are tens of thousands, Joan, as you know,
right.
small businesses that take steel, raw steel, and fashion it into products to resell to auto supply companies, to automobile manufacturers, a lot of small businesses out there that do this.
That's right.
So it's not good for the economy. And you know, Joan, something else, the increased steel prices, along with the increased fuel prices, are going to have an impact on inflation. I predict that within the next couple of weeks, you and I will be talking about something Kiplinger says about how this is impacting inflation.
Well, you're making a lot of predictions.
Well, you know, I'm good at
that. I've got to start writing these down.
Exactly. You need to. And, of course, you know me, Joan, frequently wrong but never in doubt.
Doubt, right.
So is Washington going to – what's the prospect of Washington stepping in again, coming to the rescue as they did three years ago?
Two chances for this, slim and none.
Yeah. Why? You think Mr. Bush has learned his lesson?
Well, first of all, you know, the president got his hands burned when he touched this the last time.
Yep, I burned him a little bit.
Exactly. So he doesn't want to do that. And then we're saying congressmen and senators from steel states will block anything that would hurt steel profits.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up just with gridlock, of course.
Well, and Joan, some of the battleground states are steel-producing states.
That's right. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Then they may, you know, Ohio seems to be one of the states in play this year, and you know, and they may still be kind of chapped about the last little steel thing. I don't know. You know, I don't know whether you know the steel producing elements of those states are bigger than the steel consumption elements of those states. That's yet to be seen. But I suspect that will be discussed in the next election, though, don't you?
I would think so, sure.
Yeah. Also, natural gas prices. Not only steel's going up, but natural gas prices are going up. And that really impacts a lot of us, Joan. I mean, many of us heat our buildings with natural gas, and we certainly, a lot of the factories that are out there run their processes with natural gas, don't they?
That's right. And we're saying things will be even worse next winter.
Well, you're just opening up a little... turning a little skunk loose in our tea party here, aren't you?
Full of bad news here, yeah.
Yeah, we got to fix that. We're going to try to find some good things to talk about in just a little bit. 29 after a quick break, we'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
He is spying. die for small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks for hanging around with us today. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, you guys have an outstanding website that I like telling my audience about. It's Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And the reason I like telling them about it is because it's a great place to go, folks, for a lot of information. A lot of it's free, and some of it is not free. Some of it they want you to subscribe for, but it's worth the subscription. Especially that 30-day free trial that you guys still have, Joan. And I'd like to tell you about some of these publications that I'd like to encourage you to check out for Kiplinger. One of them is the Kiplinger Letter, which has been around for a long time. And then, Joan, you got three that comes every week by email or by mail. Then you got right. three biweekly letters too, don't you?
That's right.
The Agriculture Letter, the California Letter, and the. The tax letter,
and the agriculture letter.
That tax letter, that's really an excellent piece, isn't it?
It's the best one, yeah.
It's the best one, yeah. And then there's a magazine.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So check all those out, folks. You can find that one, by the way, that last one, you can find at your newsstand. And so check it out. And also, do you want to give us the phone number, Joan?
Sure. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask them for the Blasingame free 30-day free trial. And if they say Blasingame, what does that mean? Just say never mind. Give me the free trial.
Right.
Okay, Joan. We're still talking a little bit more about rising costs of doing business. Shipping costs are going up, aren't they?
Yeah. More bad news.
What's up with that?
We're saying that because of these new rules that limit the amount of time that the driver can spend behind the wheel of a truck, those rates are going to be going up this year. And we're saying maybe 10%.
Yeah, added payroll. And, you know, Joan, it's kind of hard to argue with that. I don't know what the exact details on that is, but it's kind of hard to argue with that if that makes the roads safer.
I agree, because I don't remember the limit, but it's not an unreasonable limit, like 2 hours or something. I think it may be something like eight.
You're right. No, it actually may be more than a regular work day.
Right.
I think it may actually be more than that. But here's the challenge I think we got with truckers. God bless every one of them. Is if you tell them eight, they might be tempted to stretch it to 10. Or let's say it's 10 hours. That's what they can drive.
Right.
If you tell them 10, that's the law. They might be tempted to stretch it to 8. I know that happens. I mean to 12.
12.
But if you drop that to 8, for example. They're less likely to stretch it to 12. They might stretch it to 10.
And 10, right.
And maybe
well,
that
it's
makes
like the
sense.
Speed limit.
Maybe
yeah.
that, exactly. We all, you know, I don't always drive exactly on the speed limit. I know that's a big shock to you, Joan, but...
Yes.
But the thing is that if that makes the... But you know, the truth is, Joan, truckers are the safest people on the highway.
Well, that's good.
They're the professionals. I mean, I really do admire the work that they do, and they are the real professionals out there. And I think most of the time you'll find if a truck's involved in a wreck, it was probably something one of us did in the car. If you notice what happens on those things, it's probably not the truck driver's fault. Joan, let's move on down and get into something that's not the least bit controversial. Tell us what that is.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the media about same-sex marriages, so Kiplinger put its own spin on it and asked, could legalization of same-sex marriages affect your business? Now, we're not necessarily advocating it. We're just saying, what would happen if these marriages were legalized?
What would happen?
And, you know, what the big question would be, benefits.
Well, isn't that one of the main practical reasons that gay couples give for wanting to be married, legally married?
Well, I don't know. That may be a practical reason. I'm sure there's a lot of other reasons.
Oh, there are a lot of other reasons.
I don't know but they don't have to get married for that necessarily. Because, well, first of all, you have a lot of companies that extend benefits to partners who are not wedded partners. Number mm-hmm. one and number two, a lot of these marriages that these people are undertaking are not really, I don't think, haven't been court tested yet, so I don't think they're automatically entitled to benefits. So I think they're going for something else other than benefits when they're doing these marriage ceremonies.
But when they make their argument for marriage, that is one of the pretty significant things that I think that they positions that they take is that for retirement benefits, for health benefits, for the continuation, for the enduring of the estate. When one dies, the other one, you know, inherits the estate. That kind of course, they can handle that. They can handle that part with a will.
Right.
But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this when we come back after these messages, and then we'll move on to some other things. We're going to talk about productivity gains and a little bit, and whether everybody's happy about those. Tony Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend, Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about the same-sex marriage issue that's going around, spreading around the country right now. It's getting a lot of airtime, a lot of publicity. It's very controversial. Kiplinger this week made the point, you know, what's it going to do to your business? Could it mean that you would have to extend benefits as an owner, that an owner would have to, a company would have to extend benefits to a gay partner. And the point I was making is, one of the first points that I ever heard made about gay marriage, the proposal of gay marriage, by gay people was the ability to for health care. If one of them stays home and the other one works, then, you know, should they want the health care to extend to that other person?
Well, that may be. I don't know. I mean,
it is.
And
also the retirement, the estate can be transferred by a will, but not the retirement, apparently.
So partner benefits are not gaining ground at companies.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I'm just saying
I thought
that
they were.
You may be right.
Making marriage unnecessary.
You're saying that maybe that argument's been neutralized a little bit by some practices.
That's what I thought. I don't know.
I don't know either. But Joan, I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I'm probably going to have to say that at this point, that I'm not a proponent of gay marriages. I'm still trying to sort all this out. But I will tell you this, Joan, in my opinion, regardless of you know whether it's the right thing to do or not, the mayor of San Francisco should have been arrested or taken out of office for what he did, because he basically as a representative of that city and a legal political leader, elected leader of that city, He violated the California law.
I wonder why he wasn't.
They arrested the mayor in New York, didn't they?
Or they came out of office. Not and I want to be clear, it was the mayor somewhere in New York State,
right.
Not the mayor of New York, of course.
No, right, exactly. Thank you. But I don't know why, you know, somebody close to me said, you know, where was the attorney general in all this thing in California? Why wasn't something done there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
I've even heard gay people say that they didn't think that what that mayor did served any purpose because he did break a law, and that's not what these people want to do.
Right. Well, I mean, he obviously knew he was breaking a law, and he probably was willing to accept the consequences and just wanted to spotlight the issue.
But so far, there have been no consequences.
Yeah. Well, that's not his fault.
Yeah. And I wonder, speaking of business, Joan, I wonder what that exposure has done to San Francisco's tourism. Ever thought about that?
Don't know.
That's interesting because San Francisco is a thriving, business center, but it's also a major tourist attraction.
Right, but I think people have always known that it's a place where gay folks tend to go, so mm-hmm. I don't think that would be a surprise to anybody.
Very interesting. But Joan, how much, let me ask you this question, how much of a campaign issue is this going to be in the 2004 election?
The president made it a huge campaign issue.
Yeah. Yeah. What did he say? How did he do that?
Well, he said he favors, and I have a feeling, and I don't know. I mean, I don't talk to Karl Rove. I just have a funny feeling that the president would have preferred not to be so out front on this issue. But I think he had to appeal to his conservative base. So he has come out and said he favors a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. And the problem with that position is, whether you favor gay marriage or not, there are people who don't favor gay marriage who still say, I don't know if I really want to amend the Constitution on this. We should be leaving this up to the states.
That's its own controversy, isn't it?
Right. It's a whole separate thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to have people on both sides of the gay marriage issue who will be on both sides of the constitutional amendment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
and then there's a states' rights issue in there, too, of course. Then.
But what do the polls show? Don't the polls show that 60% of Americans are against gay marriages?
I think it shows most Americans are against gay marriage, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, either a majority or a very significant minority don't want to amend the Constitution
right.
on this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's a very interesting thing. And what's interesting, Joan, is that it's been brought to this level basically by four Supreme Court justices in Massachusetts and a mayor of a city, if you think about it.
Well, I think, Massachusetts, really, this issue was rolling long before the San Francisco mayor got into it.
No,
I agree. It was Massachusetts that really got it going.
But he gave it some legs, major legs out there, and so it's very interesting.
I really only saw that as a publicity stunt. I didn't really think that really, because I don't know that those marriages, since he was breaking the law, those marriages aren't even valid.
Well, you're right, I guess. I mean, I would think that you're right about that, as much as I hate to say things like that.
Ooh.
As much as I hate to admit that you might actually be right. Joan, productivity gains. Let's move over. Totally different topic. Productivity gains, according to Kiplinger, are not being universally applauded. What's wrong with being productive?
Well, the problem is the more productive you are, the fewer people that you need.
That's the problem with the unemployment rate, isn't it?
Exactly. Higher productivity contributes to the unemployment rate. So no good deed goes unpunished, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, though, is, and one of the things I'd like to encourage people to pay attention to in the election year, Joan, is that when politicians start using this as a political ploy, a political stick to wield, this issue is happening all over the world. It's not just happening in the United States. Productivity gains is hurting unemployment levels all over the world. It's about technology. It's not about something any politician did. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back. Back at 7 till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Joan, productivity is a two-edged sword, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it.
It cuts for us on one side of the economy and producing more goods and lowering costs and finding efficiencies and putting more money on the bottom line. But on the other side, there's a human toll to the productivity, isn't there?
Oh, that absolutely. Well, again, the more productive you get, the fewer people you need.
Let's talk for a minute about how this is manifesting right now. It's manifesting in a much slower, even though unemployment decreases lag the economy out of a recession. Joan, as you have reminded us many times before, this one is lagging a little bit more than others, isn't it?
Right, and we keep saying that the unemployment indicator is a lagging indicator, and it's going to take a while for these jobs to get going. But even today in the Wall Street Journal, there's a story talking about executives at major firms are ramping up hiring, but not full speed yet.
Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is, and I may be part of the, I mean, I contribute to this, Joan, because literally today I recommended to my audience that when they grow their business, that they look to technology first and people second.
That's right.
And it's the 21st century business model.
Well, and you don't have to pay technology any benefits.
That's exactly right. Or keep paying for it.
Right.
And so the thing is, Joan, is it's not this isn't a bad thing. Productivity isn't a bad thing. It's just that it has an equal and opposite reaction, as Mr. Newton might have said, and it creates challenges for redeploying our human assets, redeploying the people who. And that's where we are right now, and we're kind of in an unprecedented way, aren't we, right now with this?
In terms of technology,
yeah,
and productivity, sure.
In terms of the jobs that people lost, not being able to go back to those jobs,
right?
And because part of productivity, Joan, has contributed to the efficiencies of globalization too, hasn't it?
Oh, that's another whole can of worms. That's right,
a whole can of worms. No question about it. Joan, let's move down and talk about. And by the way, on this productivity thing, Joan,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to go away.
No,
just like globalization, it's not going
to
go away.
We don't really want productivity to go away either.
We can't rail against it. See, you know, one of the ways the French tried to solve this problem, they reduced the number of the work week to 36 hours.
Oh, that's right.
So the employment would go up. Well, that's a stupid thing to do. You know.
Just costs more, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's like saying I've got a broken toe. I don't want to go through the pain of it of having the bone broken. I'll just cut it off. You know.
Right.
Okay. Let's move down and talk about health care. Is there going to be any major health care legislation this year, Joan?
No, you had the big one last year, which was of course the Medicare prescription drug benefit bill.
In December. Uh-huh.
You know, then people are calling for, you know, rewrite of Medicaid, limits on medical malpractice. Lawsuits and all these other things, but we're saying that this is not the year. This year is a real gridlock year because it's an election year.
Well, and Mr. Bush and the Republicans made a major coup, I think, in getting the health care the Medicare bill passed in December, which included health savings accounts, but it also included some elements that weren't so good, but. It sort of co-opted a Democrat plank in their platform, didn't it, Joan?
Oh, that's interesting, right?
Don't you? I mean, and so no way. For one thing, the Republicans don't need another health care plank, another health care advantage this year. And the Democrats lost one last year, and they're sure as heck not going to give him one this year.
That's right.
So that's
no
the reason,
question
as you
about
say,
it.
if you're hoping there's going to be some legislation that's going to, you know, you're in the medical field or whatever, it ain't happening this year, is it, Joan?
Got a long wait.
Jonah, we're going to catch. Let's move over to page four. We're going to catch Osama.
Well, it's. I guess, you know, if you read today's Wall Street Journal, the answer is not anytime soon because
yeah.
the Afghanistan people are not cooperating with us because there's a lot of Taliban still in there.
Yeah, and Jonah, can I correct you a little bit?
Sure.
The Taliban are not cooperating. There's a lot of,
I didn't say that. I said the Afghan people aren't cooperating because there's too many Taliban in there watching them.
Right. Oh, I see.
And they will retaliate
yeah. okay.
if the people try to cooperate.
They're not cooperating because they don't like us. They're afraid.
They fear the Taliban.
Yeah, I see what
yeah.
you mean. Okay, I agree with that. But the point you guys make is that whether he is or not, it won't make much of a dent in terrorism.
That's a good point.
And I think you guys made that this week, and I think that was the right thing to say. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.